systems to manage energy systems dynamically. We're also shifting from, you know, a very simple energy supply system where the system demands and the energy is supplied. You know, the diesel tank is full, we fill the tank in the truck, we don't think about energy anymore. As we move to electrified systems that are not dispatchable, but variable and intermittent, okay, now we have to think differently. If we want to make it look the same as what we're used to, then we have to put a battery in place. That's very expensive. But if you can be more dynamic at how you actually manage your system to align with the energy flows, then you gain very significant benefits. But that requires, you know, split-second, millisecond intelligence, and that's what we're getting now with power electronics and the ability to manage these systems in a way that we haven't needed to do before. And so the point is, we're sort of across these three technology boundaries, we're sort of at that level now, and they're moving differently in terms of space, in terms of scale. Now, if you go a little bit back to that framework that I had in terms of where the wastes are, what we start with here is, let's say, let's look at the execution waste and the process waste. And if you think you have an existing trucking system, you have a framework now in the context of mechanization where we need to make these tools work as hard as possible. We need to create a common language to understand, how do we talk about utilization? How do we talk about the things that get in the way of optimal performance? Remember, the actual performance we see is our optimal performance minus all this waste that occurs. So if we address and tackle the waste, then we can move towards optimal performance, so that the actual and optimal performance starts to look the same, right? And so these are typically error codes and all sorts of things. Every company has their own framework of language that they use. This would be one example of that. You know, again, there's expected things like maintenance. You know, there's non-scheduled stuff. Then there's operating delays. Even when you get to the net productive time, really, this is the place where you add value. If you could only do this, that would be great. But of course, it's not realistic. There's lots of stuff to get into. You want to try and squeeze those things that steal from your optimal performance. You know, and if you look at accidents, for instance, those are execution waste, where things happen unexpectedly, don't want to happen. You know, there's ways that you can leverage technologies. We have collision avoidance systems. We have the same there at the back with OmniPro, where these systems are becoming smarter. It's not just to protect the equipment, but it's the people. You can put it now with your stop signs so that the trucks can recognize the stop signs even if the people don't. So there's a whole bunch of things that you can now do to mitigate, you know, having that waste in the system. Then there is, you know, waste that, you know, tires breaking, tires needing to cool down. You know, there's two of these things on the market. There's the one where you protect the sidewall of the tire in cases we need. I think we have a presentation today or tomorrow on, you know, trying something different with tires. You know, we have to try different things, so now we have to see how that benefits the system. And of course, you have system designs where you have, like, I don't know if you remember the old ETF trucks, which is now Beholt, where they've actually designed a whole truck with 20 wheels, where if any one of the wheels break, it could be lifted up. It could be 5-15 minutes to take the wheel off and put it back. So it's a modular system that sort of minimizes the impact that tires may have on your operations and things like that. Then, of course, autonomous. You know, I don't have to talk to this crowd about autonomous, but dealing with schedule breaks, taking people out of the equation, and then making sure that the system operates optimally. Roads is something that's absolutely critical for performance. There's multiple ways to improve road construction, but then put road covers in. It's not just the performance of the trucks, it's dust, it's all sorts of other issues that you have to do as well. There's also now new technologies that the trucks will sense and monitor the roads as you drive, and collectively have, you know, all the agents in the system feedback, and then in 3D you can map what the road conditions are dynamically and understand where to preempt problems or not. That's very exciting. Then, even when you get to the place where you're on the net productivity area, where you have process waste like the delays that are caused by loading, when you design the mine, it's always, you know, pairing the shovel with the truck, or your truck constrained, or your shovel constrained. This surge loader was developed for a client, you know, many years ago, just as a stopgap for some issue they had, and then they discovered, wow, the productivity improvements by having something is significant. You can now decouple effectively the size truck that you use with the shovel, because the truck and the shovel is now paired through this buffer system, if you like. You can have optimal loading. You have very simple pathway to drive. You can even do two of them now. There's technology called MindSense in copper mines and stuff where the ore grades get very low now, that you can actually sense with the shovel. It's called shovel sense. You can sense what the grade of the ore in the shovel is, and then determine, is this a waste ore, or if this is a ore that has to go to the process plant. And you put them in two of the different buckets, and the trucks will pick up different ones. The impact of that is very significant from avoiding sending valuable stuff to the waste dump and avoiding sending waste to the processing plant. Massive leverage, right? But it's integrating the full system approach and understanding into a system like that to operationalize that. Very, very, very good potential. And then, of course, on the dumping side, you have often a challenge with the maneuverability of the trucks. And then, of course, instead of maneuvering the truck, maneuver the platform on which the truck is sitting. There's technologies like that. All of these, if you combine them in the proper context, can drive forward the reduction of execution and process waste in very meaningful ways that ultimately translates into using less trucks, having less accidents, having less tire wear. You know, it adds up from a system perspective, and I will encourage you to look at those things and then position it in the context of your system that you want to improve, right? Then getting a little bit more detailed, and I'm not expecting you to read all this, but as we now expand to saying, well, we need to address structural waste as well. And that means, okay, well, we need to actually look at the system differently now, the hauling system itself. And the problem now is that even in the same mine that's designed for trucks, if you now want to evaluate other hauling technologies, there's many things that's different in how these technologies are configured. Now, typically in a deep pit, with hard rock, about 60 to 70% of your energy is spent really just working against gravity. It's really just moving up against gravity. That's where you spend all your energy, where significant improvements can be made over short distances. On things like iron ore and oil sands, where you travel long distances with heavy trucks, of course, then the tires overheat. Those are different challenges from an energy perspective. Then how the systems are configured depends on very much what the characteristic of the material is, what the operating scenarios for the mine is, what the mine design looks like, hole distance, topology, all of those things have to be incorporated in evaluating, well, what's the true cost of this hauling technology that you're now evaluating on a like-for-like basis, right? Then we understand what the technology's capabilities are, we understand what the process issues are in terms of delays and how the system interacts with each other, and that all translates into, you know, what are the operating costs, what's the infrastructure requirements, what's the financing cost, what's the life of the asset. And when you bring that all together, you can get what we call a levelized cost of material movement. And in that way, you can now compare the technologies next to each other on a dollar per ton basis, which is objective, and then you can see how those technologies compare. That's the quantitative side, but you include into that the qualitative side. How does it impact society? How does it impact the environment? How does it change safety? What's the socioeconomic participation of people in this new hauling system in the context of that mine that you're going to be building? And so this then takes into account all of those issues that we talked about in terms of the overall system. It's not that hard to quantify. I think you'll have access to these slides. You're welcome to ask me after. Welcome to make all of these things available. But this is a way that you can now fairly compare different technologies across each other. Then if you want to go one step further and say, I now want to design a whole system. Now you actually have to use that formula that I said to you before is on the finance side here. But typically in the way that mines are built, is it starts with assuming that we're going to have a truck. And the truck has a certain width. And that certain width then is in our design principles that we'll design the benches to accommodate the size of the hauling equipment that we're using, right? And from there, we do the pit design in terms of the grades that we can manage with the technology we have. Then we design the mine and the schedule all around that. The problem now becomes if you want to rethink haulage and you want to rethink the technologies you're using, it's constrained by the design principles that we built for a trucking system, right? So we have to go back and change all of that completely and say, no. We have to go back and now look at different technologies here and actually say, start with the technology and go back to redesign the mine to fit the technology. Just the same as mines have optimized over time to fit trucks, we now have the opportunity to say, if you have new technology that have different capabilities than trucks, how do we optimize the design of the mine to fit that? And then be able to go back and forth all the time. Now, If you've been involved in mind planning, it doesn't work like that. It goes one way, right? So being able to go back and forth like that is very valuable, because now you can tune not just your Olink technologies. You can tune the mind and the Olink technologies and integrated system and all the components with it, and all the time reflecting, you know, does this make economic sense? What trade-offs am I trying to assume or not? Now, I would say 5 years ago, maybe a little bit later, it was not really possible to do this. It was not really possible to do this. It was very hard. With the technologies we have now, like 3DFi, I'll show you a quick example. You can do that very quickly. You might be aware of technologies like Polymathy and Mosentech. These are digital platforms that allow you now to do things digitally before you actually go and spend the effort to go and design stuff to understand really what is it that I'm desiring, where are the trade-offs, how can I manage that. I want to show you two examples or so on how we did that, and then come back to the challenge that I said about 90% reduction in energy. Now, again, you can't read this, unfortunately. We did work for the Canadian Mining Innovation Council, where we actually looked at what technologies are out there. But again, we tried to understand how does it fit into the new energy system. Whatever you design now has to be designed for the new energy system in the future. And so we looked at all the sources of energy. We looked at all the sources of fuel or energy available for the trucks, internal combustion, electric, and then the linear synchronous motors. And we actually looked at all the technologies that are, you know, either in TRL5 or higher or commercial. And this was actually looking at everything but innovation in trucking, other than the things around electrifying the trucking system. I'll show you a few examples of this. But what we then do from first principles, if we look at the energy conversion, we look at the energy to work conversion, we look at the gradient, friction, payload to ore, to sort of total weight ratios, capacity, distance, particle size. And then what we get from that, again, you can't see that, is across multiple different dimensions, and this is just to sort of show you the span of possibilities that exist. There are multiple different ways to address different things. And typically, hybrid systems allow you now to say, I know that in my situation, 70% of my energy is consumed in moving out of a very deep pit of kilometer or more. Okay, so that's huge value in solving that problem. Now, I may have to solve that problem not with a truck, with something else, but then I need trucks somewhere else. And so how do you integrate the system for the system to be optimal? This just gives you a sense that there is a significant amount of technologies available, and hybrid solutions have very, very, very significant potential. This is one that, you know, I've talked about for a lot. I've looked at this technology so much, and there's other similar technologies like this as well. You may all be aware of the RailWare technology, right, which is really kind of breaking your brain if you look at it. We as trucks want to maximize the utilization of our trucking systems by making the stuff move as fast as possible, because you carry everything with you on the truck, your engine, you know, the truck is a whole self-sustaining system. With the RailWare, it doesn't work like that. The whole system is broken apart. The engine sits somewhere on the side. It's completely decoupled from the moving system. So what you want to do is to move as slow as possible. You want to minimize the power that you put into the system. The energy may be the same, but you want to minimize the power, so you want to move it as slow as possible. Anytime you move something faster, you need to put in more power, right? That's going against the capital cost that you want to keep low. Anyway, 15 years ago, we did calculations. Today, there are field operations that have empirical data that support this outcome. But if you look at, for instance, an example of a truck going on a flat surface for 10 kilometers, moving 3,000 tons an hour, you know, that gives you what the energy is. And then if you look at on a slope, of course, it's a massive increase because of going against gravity. And then if you compare that against a conveyor and a railway, you get these kind of numbers at the bottom. Now, that kind of breaks your mind in terms of your intuition. It's like that bat and ball thing, right? How can it not be 10 cents, you know, when it's actually 5 cents? Or when you slow down and you look at all the components, it's actually true from first principles. You know, the rolling resist, all of that stuff combined, right? And then when you look at the total cost of the system on a levelized cost basis, massive improvements, but requires you to change the system, requires ore conditioning, interfacing to be different, and that's sometimes really hard if you're constrained in terms of what parameters you're able to flex. What we like about trucks is that they have spatial capacity and spatial flexibility, and lots of capacity flexibility. You can add a truck every now and then. Trucks can go anywhere, and we love that, right? Well, we don't always see the penalty we pay on energy efficiency for having that flexibility, right? And when diesel is available and cheap, it makes sense. And if there's no other options, it makes sense. But if there's no other options which are significantly more energy efficient, which gives you flexibility on spatial capacity side, we now have to look at it in a different way. And so, I mean, there's the Volvo one that you know. Instead of going bigger, you go smaller, because you now have the exponential increase in information systems that allow you to actually manage these systems in a way that you couldn't do before. And if you combine now a hybrid system where you have an electric system, smaller, faster, with something like a RailAware, the combined system gives you as good or better spatial flexibility and capacity flexibility, and you don't have to trade off the energy efficiency for that either. And the combined total then gives you something that is very significant in an improvement that's possible. But often you need to wait for the new mine to build something like that. And therefore, that is lacked in the past, but not anymore. Just a few more slides, but I wanted to show you the other thing that's equally, I think, high potential. It's we have to change how we design mines, right? We built pits the way we built them because the prevailing orthodoxy in mining is that if anything possible, move things forward, because that moves cash flow forward. Get to the ore as fast as you can, because that makes you more money, all else equal. Well, all else is not equal anymore. And so what we do in hard rock deep pit mining is we make these benches, we go deep to get to the ore as fast as we can, because we spent so much capex before, right? And then we do pushbacks. And that's the most optimal, usually, how you design the mine. But that's in the paradigm of using diesel trucks, using diesel available and stuff like that. Now, if you tell people do input crushing and conveying, or put a railway, or put the systems in place, the problem is always that, yes, but the benches make it really difficult. There's not enough spatial flexibility in the system because the benches constrain you to move these things. Very hard to do. But then you have to ask the question, who says you have to have benches like that? Who said you have to develop the mine like that? There's no rule that says you have to do that, right? So I'll show you what we did using 3DFY as the mine planning software, where we said, we'll strip mine it. And so if you strip mine it, basically you end up with the same pit, you end up with the same amount of ore, but the timing of it changes. But very importantly, the operational complexity changes, because instead of having all these benches that you have to in multiple places mine now, you can basically strip the first layer off, you know, in the way that people do strip mining, right? And so that provides a lot more flexibility for you to use mobile equipment in the pit. And then you go layer by layer by layer. But that breaks people's brains again, because they say, now you're going to do strip mining of waste for the first 4 years? We're not going to make money. The NPV is not going to work. I said, yes, but who said you have to build everything at the beginning of the mine? Who says you cannot wait for building your processing plant and putting capital in place for later? And then the question is, if the hauling technology that you use is 50% cheaper than the one that you have now, that time value of money that you have in delaying getting to the ore, you know, is no match for the massive savings that you make from cash flow perspective in having lower cost. And then what's the NPV result of that? It's really hard. I do it on Excel. People don't believe it. So you have to do it in mine planning software, where you actually work at it on block-by-block basis. And so we took the mine, changed the hauling numbers, infinite flexibility in these tools. We go through the system and say, with this project, we modeled those three parameters. What's the waste cost? What's the hauling cost for ore? And then every time you go lower, there's an incremental cost for the gravity that you have to add to the hauling cost, right? And then we sequence the pit in a way that allows us to optimize it based on the ore characteristics. And in the end, if we do it normally with a normal pit sequencing, get 400 million. And if we do it with reducing the hauling cost, assuming that the technology is available, which we know, then we get 40 million more. And all we did is we move a bit of capex out, but we significantly simplified the operations of mining that mine, right? That's a very simple way. There's other ways that you can do with electric mines now. That the problem with battery density, it's not strong enough to actually get you to go up yet. So we have hybrid systems, it all works great. But what if you can use gravity in a way that we didn't think about in open pits? What if you can do, instead of moving out of the pit, you move into the middle of the pit, you have an ore chute, and at the bottom of the ore chute you have something like a railway infrastructure, which is very cheap to take to the surface. And so you're basically letting the ore down a hole and taking up with a very, very, very cheap electrified simple solution. And then what you do is you use smaller systems as batteries where the loaded truck is always on a downhill slope. And then you can almost recharge always with gravity. Now, we've run those numbers as well, and it's amazing that it is incredibly profitable to do that. But that completely breaks the mold of how you mine an open pit mine. Because now we're doing stuff that breaks the orthodoxies in mining, which says never move anything down when you have to move it up again. That's like complete waste, right? But if when you move it up, you can move it up so much more efficiently using these technologies, but these technologies are constrained to work in the pit environment, then you use the gravity to charge the battery and you leverage this very cheap energy efficiency of some of these technologies. You combine them in a hybrid solution and then you develop a mine system that works differently. And now you rethink hauling and loading completely, right? It's all possible. It's combining different mining technologies in the context of open pit. But again, if your purpose is to make trucks more efficient, these things are like, you know, the four familiar moves on the chessboard when three moves are available. You just can't see that because you're constrained by what you're asked to do. And I appreciate that. And so how do we then drive this change? So, you know, there's a notion that if your people are not learning, you're not leading. And it's true. Mostly what people crave is intrinsic motivators. Yeah, you know what, if you need to solve a hard problem, paying people more money has actually been shown to decrease your ability to be innovative, not improve. So what you need to do is pay people properly so that they forget about the money, and you intrinsically motivate them by saying, we're part of something bigger here. Mining has to solve the world's problems, for sure. Then you give people autonomy to go do stuff, try stuff, and then you give them the opportunity to learn. That's the thing that drives people, right? That's how we solve big problems. Now, create collaborative partnerships. Clearly, we can't solve these problems. Now, the collaborative partnerships are not external only. It's also internal to your company. Collaborate with different segments of the organization, actually, to solve this really hard problem. It's not a hauling problem. It's a system problem, right? And if you see the hydrogen truck that was built, massive amounts of, I think, 6-7 external partnerships, because you now have to bring information technology, energy technology, mechanical technology, all have to become part of a new system design, and you need new competencies to do that, right? Then develop integrative capacity. Develop the capacity to say, that technology looks weird. I can't see how it can fit into my business, but I'm going to work on integrating new technologies into my existing system as best as possible, instead of just reject it because it looks different, right? I think the other important part is when you ask people to learn, create safe environments to learn, so that if people fail, they don't get fired. Now, in mining, of course, failure is related to safety and health issues. So you have to take people outside of that mindset and create a mindset that failure for learning is actually good, right? Maximize the use of digital tools, like we just said. Absolutely. Better. You can make better decisions. You can make it faster and significantly cheaper. You can look at 1,000 iterations of things that you cannot possibly hope to do if you had to go practically test stuff. Finite element analysis, using the Dassault platforms, creating digital twins of things that as they run, but then elevate it to the system level, look at agent-based modeling, and then elevate it to the mine planning and optimizing design, and doing all of that sort of in a coherent, integrated way, is completely possible. And that allows you to explore boundaries that I think today has very difficult to do. And then engage your stakeholders early in the process so that you can get people's feedback in terms of what is it that they desire, and not just go and design something or try to drive changes without incorporating people's ideas early on in the process. And then lastly, my view is always try to think big, test small, do it digitally, and then you scale fast, right? Don't go too big too soon because that gets one into trouble. So my last slide is, you know, like I said in the beginning, we have to go through this energy transition. Mines take 10 to 15 years to develop, and then they stay for 20 years. If we have any hope of achieving the energy transition, we need to drive these new innovations now into the market, to test things now, so that we don't lock ourselves in to a future that has really shifted from the fossil fuels to the mining. We can't dig a hole to fill a hole, which is what we'll do if we don't drive forward. And people in this room really actually ask, you know, for me, is at the core of transforming the world, you know, in no small way, my way. And I think this Nobel Prize winner said it right. He said, what's the point of us having developed the science to see what's happening and the predictions that we're going to be making, if all we end up doing then is standing waiting for those things to come true, we have the ability to break that. And I think the world depends on people in this room. I am eternally grateful for what you're doing in mining, and I think together we can make a change to drive the system forward the way we need to. And I wish you good luck with your conference. I see there's very significant stuff happening here on the edges and the presentations as well. Hope you keep some of these frameworks in mind as you go through the thinking process, and always try to revert back to how does it impact the system, how does it impact those drivers.